Introduction. My purpose in writing this book was to create a detailed and comprehensive meditation manual that is easy to use. Much has been written about the many benefits of meditation and its contributions to emotional, psychological, and social well-being. But there is surprisingly little information available on how the mind works and how to train it. This is an attempt to fill that conspicuous need. This book is appropriate for anyone with a strong interest in meditation, from a complete beginner to someone who has practiced for decades. It will be particularly useful for those who already have a practice and feel ready to go further on the contemplative path. It's also for people who are dissatisfied with their progress, despite years of meditation. This includes practitioners who feel they've actually benefited from meditation, but who have started to believe the more profound states of consciousness meditation offers are beyond their reach. Rest assured, the full rewards of meditation are closer than you think. By necessity, the material I cover is often quite detailed and nuanced, yet it is my sincere belief that anyone with motivation can succeed. And it doesn't have to take a long time. The whole training process is divided into 10 distinct, easy-to-identify stages, with thorough explanations and instructions presented along the way, from your first steps on the contemplative path, all the way to being an adept practitioner at the threshold of awakening. Meditation, the science and art of living. Meditation is a science, the systematic process of training the mind. It is the science of meditation that allows people from all walks of life to experience the same amazing benefit. A regular sitting practice has been shown to enhance concentration, lower blood pressure, and improve sleep. It is used to treat chronic pain, post-traumatic stress, anxiety, depression, and obsessive-compulsive disorders. Meditators develop valuable insights into their personality, behaviors, and relationships, making it easier to recognize and change past conditioning and counterproductive views that make life difficult. They have a greater awareness and sensitivity to others, which is enormously helpful at work and in personal relationships. The calming and relaxing effects of meditation also translate into increased emotional stability when confronting the inevitable stresses of life. Yet these are only incidental benefits. Fully developed meditation skills also give rise to unique and wonderful mental states characterized by physical comfort and pleasure, joy and happiness, deep satisfaction, and profound inner peace. States that can open the mind to an intuitive appreciation of our interconnectedness and dispel the illusion of separateness created by our egos. Furthermore, these fruits of meditation can be enjoyed all day long, for many days at a time, and we can renew them whenever we like, just by sitting down and practicing. I will describe these mental states in detail, and the systematic training presented here will lead to them with unfailing certainty. But even so, these peak experiences aren't the ultimate benefit of meditation. While bliss, joy, tranquility, and equanimity are delightful, they are also transitory and easily disrupted by sickness, aging, and difficult life circumstances. They also offer no protection from the corrupting influences of lust, greed, and aversion, nor their consequences. Therefore, these states are not an end in themselves, but only a means to a higher goal. That higher goal is awakening. Other commonly used terms include enlightenment, liberation, or self-realization. Each of these refers to a complete and lasting freedom from suffering, unaffected by aging, disease, or circumstance. True happiness, the bliss of perfect contentment, follows upon liberation from suffering. Awakening isn't some transient experience of unity and temporary dissolution of ego. It's the attainment of genuine wisdom, an enlightened understanding that comes from a profound realization and awakening to ultimate truth. This is a cognitive event that dispels ignorance through direct experience. direct knowledge of the true nature of reality and the permanent liberation from suffering describes the only genuinely satisfactory goal of the spiritual path. A mind with this type of insight experiences life and death as a great adventure, with the clear purpose of manifesting love and compassion toward all beings. While this book is a kind of technical manual, it's also an artist's handbook. Meditation is the art of fully conscious living. What we make of our life, the sum total of thoughts, emotions, words, and actions that fill the brief interval between birth and death, is our one great creative masterpiece. The beauty and significance of a life well lived consists not in the works we leave behind or in what history has to say about us. It comes from the quality of conscious experience that infuses our every waking moment and from the impact we have on others. Know thyself is the advice of sages. To live life consciously and creatively as a work of art, we need to understand the raw material we have to work with. This is nothing other than the continuously unfolding stream of conscious experience that is our life. Whether we are awake or dreaming, this stream consists of sensations, thoughts, emotions, and the choices we make in response to them. That is our personal reality. The art and science of meditation helps us live a more fulfilling life because it gives us the tools we need to examine and work with our conscious experience. In other words, for your personal reality to be created purposefully rather than haphazardly, you must understand your mind. But the kind of understanding required isn't just intellectual, which is ineffective by itself. Like a naturalist studying an organism in its habitat, we need to develop an intuitive understanding of our mind. This only comes from direct observation and experience. For life to become a consciously created work of art and beauty, we must first realize our innate capacity to become a more fully conscious being. Then, through appropriately directed conscious activity, we can develop an intuitive understanding of the true nature of reality. It's only through this kind of insight that you can accomplish the highest purpose of meditative practice, awakening. This should be the goal of your practice. When life is lived in a fully conscious way, with wisdom, we can eventually overcome all harmful emotions and behavior. We won't experience greed, even in the face of lack, nor will we have ill will, even when confronted by aggression and hostility. When our speech and action come from a place of wisdom and compassion, they will always produce better results than when driven by greed and anger. All this is possible because true happiness comes from within, which means we can always find joy in both good times and bad. Although pain and pleasure are an inevitable part of human life, suffering and happiness are entirely optional. The choice is ours. A fully awake, fully conscious human being has the love, compassion, and energy to make change for the better whenever it's possible, the equanimity to accept what can't be changed, and the wisdom to know the difference. Therefore, make the aim of your meditation the cultivation of a mind capable of this type of awakening. This is the perspective from which this book is written. I sincerely hope it will be your perspective as well. There's so much myth and mystery surrounding awakening that many people tend to dismiss it. Rest assured, it's a goal within everyone's reach. The Buddha said that, with proper training, it should take no longer than 7 years and can happen even more quickly. Here, you will learn all you need to know about what must be done, how to do it, and why. Think of this book as a traveler's guide, providing you with maps of the territory and detailed directions for getting where you want to go. A modern roadmap for meditation. This book is the result of discovering how few long-time practitioners have ever experienced any of the more exalted states of meditation, much less the profound realizations that it offers. What I learned is that even after many years of trying, people weren't making the kind of progress they should have. The sincerity of their aspirations and the amount of time they spent practicing were definitely not the problem. What they lacked was a clear understanding of exactly which skills they needed to cultivate, in what order, and how to go about doing it. Put another way, what they needed but didn't have was a clear map of the process. It isn't that these kinds of roadmaps don't exist, because they certainly do, but they are largely inaccessible to most meditators. Some 2,500 years ago, the Buddha presented meditation training as a sequence of developmental stages in a series of verses known as the Anapanasati Sutta. Each verse describes one step in a progressive method for training the mind. Yet these verses are short on practical details, and so cryptic as to be incomprehensible to any but the most experienced meditators. Perhaps there wasn't any need for the Buddha to go into specifics, because at the time there were many others who could interpret his words and provide clear instructions. Around 800 years later, the Indian monk Asanga identified 9 distinct stages in the process of developing concentration. 4 centuries after Asanga, another Indian monk named Kamalashila, who later taught in Tibet, elaborated on these stages of training in his 3-part Stages of Meditation, Bhavana Krama. Another invaluable source of information is the Path of Purification, Visuddhimagga, compiled in the 5th century by the great Theravada commentator Buddhaghosa. As all these masters realized, teaching meditation by stages is an easy and effective way to help someone achieve the highest goals of the practice. Unfortunately, these and many other excellent maps of meditation lie buried in the commentarial literatures of different Buddhist traditions. Considering the volume and diversity of these commentaries, and that many of them have yet to be translated into European languages, it's no wonder the average Western meditator remains unaware of them. There is also the issue of interpretation. Few people, other than serious scholars, are able to cope with the obscure terminology and complex language of dense texts from a very different time and culture. However, traditional meditation teachings can't be properly understood without some experience of the kinds of mental states being described. Unless these scholars are also serious meditators, which is often not the case, their attempts at interpretation will always fall short. The modern roadmap offered in this book combines experience, tradition, and science. It's a synthesis based on first-hand experience and expanded on through the shared experiences of many other dedicated practitioners. To make sense of my own meditations and find guidance about where my practice should go next, I turned to my teachers, the Pali Suttas, and the commentaries of several different Buddhist traditions. Over and over, these traditional sources gave me the information I needed and provided an appropriate context to fit the pieces together. By integrating this information and my own experiences with the insights of psychology and cognitive neuroscience, I've reverse-engineered traditional meditation instructions to create a contemporary map of meditation. It's divided into 10 progressive stages to be used in charting your progress. While the structure of this presentation comes directly from traditional teachings, Asanga in particular, the meditation instructions that flesh it out do not. Also, this book is a fusion of teachings from different Buddhist traditions. While it is entirely consistent with all of them, it does not reflect any one tradition in particular. I believe this is one of its great advantages. It brings together the Indo-Tibetan Mahayana and traditional Theravada meditation teachings and shows how each fills in the gaps of the other. The techniques presented here apply to every kind of meditation practice. Keep in mind that all these source teachings were intended for monastics living in supportive communities of meditators. There wasn't much need to provide basic instructions and practical details, or to give examples. This isn't the case for modern lay practitioners. Most are practicing with little guidance, and often on their own. Therefore, while closely following these original teachings, I provide much more detail and give examples. I have also added an extra stage, establishing a practice, to Asanga's 9 stages to help people with jobs, families, and other responsibilities navigate the challenge of finding the time for meditation in their busy lives. These and other differences in this book reflect the differences between practicing as a householder and as a monastic. To help you progress as a householder, I offer you a clear map of the process that describes the whole journey, step by step. What needs to be accomplished at each stage, and how to do it, what things are better left until a later stage, and what pitfalls should be avoided. Otherwise, the contemplative path can seem like traveling from New York to L.A. with directions like turn right and turn left, but without a roadmap or a description of the terrain. Some people might make it eventually, but the majority would get lost. However, an accurate map will let you know where you're at and where you need to head next. It will also make the whole journey much quicker, easier, and more enjoyable. A book like this inevitably requires its own technical vocabulary. Some of these terms are influenced by Western psychology and cognitive sciences, and a few come from the ancient languages of India, Pali and Sanskrit. Many others are familiar words you're quite used to hearing, such as attention and awareness, but I will use them in a very specific way. Taking a little extra time to learn the meaning of these terms will be immensely helpful. It gives us a precise language to describe the practice and understand subtle experiences and states of mind. I define these key terms as simply and clearly as possible, emphasizing them each time they appear in a new context. Putting this practice into context. The meditation landscape in the West is a vibrant but confusing place. Tibetan practices emphasize elaborate visualizations or sophisticated analytical meditations, whereas Zen strips meditation down to the bare bones, giving you minimal instructions like just sit. Some Theravada teachers emphasize rigorously cultivating mindfulness to the exclusion of stable, focused attention, while others insist that intense concentration leading to deep, meditative absorption is best. Rather than argue for any specific technique, this book will help you make sense of all these different approaches without having to reject any of them. But to do this, I first need to clarify an important set of terms commonly found in meditation literature, showing how they relate to each other and the goal of awakening. These terms are shamatha, tranquility or calm abiding, vipassana, insight, samadhi, concentration or stable attention, and sati, mindfulness. Awakening from our habitual way of perceiving things requires a profound shift in our intuitive understanding of the nature of reality. Awakening is a cognitive event, the culminating insight in a series of very special insights called vipassana. This climax of the progress of insight only occurs when the mind is in a unique mental state called shamatha. Shamatha and vipassana are both generated using stable attention, samadhi, and mindfulness, sati. Although it's possible to cultivate either shamatha or vipassana independently of one another, both are necessary for awakening. Shamatha has 5 characteristics: effortlessly stable attention, samadhi, powerful mindfulness, sati, joy, tranquility, and equanimity. The complete state of shamatha results from working with stable attention and mindfulness until joy emerges. Joy then gradually matures into tranquility, and equanimity arises out of that tranquility. A mind in shamatha is the ideal instrument for achieving insight. Vipassana refers specifically to insight into the true nature of reality that radically transforms our understanding of ourselves and our relationship to the world. However, meditation also produces many other very useful, mundane insights, such as a better understanding of our own personality, social interactions, human behavior in general, and how the everyday world works. It can give us flashes of creative brilliance or intellectual epiphanies that solve problems or help us make new discoveries. These useful insights are not vipassana, however, because they neither transform us personally nor our understanding of reality in any profound way. The insights called vipassana are not intellectual. Rather, they are experientially based, deeply intuitive realizations that transcend and ultimately shatter our commonly held beliefs and understandings. The five most important of these are insights into impermanence, emptiness, the nature of suffering, the causal interdependence of all phenomena, and the illusion of the separate self, that is, no self. You can experience the first four of these insights using stable attention, samadhi, and mindfulness, sati, to investigate phenomena, dhamma vicaya, with persistence and energy, virya. The fifth insight into no self is the culminating insight that actually produces awakening, because only by overcoming our false, self-centered worldview can we realize our true nature. But this crucial insight requires, in addition to the first four insights, that the mind also be in a state of shamatha, filled with deep tranquility and equanimity. For both shamatha and vipassana, you need stable attention, samadhi, and mindfulness, sati. Unfortunately, many meditation traditions split samadhi and sati, linking concentration practice exclusively to shamatha and mindfulness practice exclusively to vipassana. This creates all sorts of problems and misunderstandings, such as emphasizing mindfulness at the expense of stable attention, or vice versa. Stable, hyper-focused attention without mindfulness leads only to a state of blissful dullness, a complete dead end. But just as stable attention without mindfulness is a dead end, the opposite is also true. You simply cannot develop mindfulness without stable attention. Until you have at least a moderate degree of stability, mindfulness practice will consist mostly of mind wandering, physical discomfort, drowsiness, and frustration. Like two wings of a bird, both stable attention and mindfulness are needed, and when they are cultivated together, the destination of this flight is shamatha and vipassana. Also, brief episodes of shamatha can occur long before you become an adept practitioner. Insight can happen at any time as well. This means a temporary convergence of shamatha and vipassana is possible and can lead to awakening at any stage. In this sense, awakening is somewhat unpredictable, almost like an accident. Although the possibility of awakening exists at any time, the probability increases steadily as you progress through the stages. Therefore, awakening is an accident, but continued practice will make you accident-prone. You're training your mind throughout the 10 stages, cultivating all the qualities of shamatha. As you progress, the mind inevitably becomes more and more fertile for the seeds of insight to ripen and blossom into awakening. The 10 stages provide a systematic process for developing stable attention and mindfulness together, in balance, with shamatha and vipassana as outcomes. The most accurate and useful description of this method is shamatha vipassana meditation, or the practice of tranquility and insight. Again, the practice offered in this book doesn't have to be a replacement for other techniques, but instead can complement any other type of meditation you already do. You can use the 10 stages approach in combination with, or as a precursor to, any of the many Mahayana or Theravada practices. How to use this book. Here's a brief summary of the book's structure, so you have an idea where you're headed. It begins with an overview of all 10 stages and the 4 milestone achievements that mark your progress through the stages. Detailed chapters on each stage follow, with a series of interludes that come between the stages. The first interlude lays the groundwork for the practice. You'll be introduced to the model of conscious experience and learn about working with attention and peripheral awareness. The second interlude introduces you to the major hindrances and problems you will face in your practice. The third interlude builds on ideas you've learned so far to explain how mindfulness works. The fourth and fifth interludes introduce new, more in-depth models of mind, the Moments of Consciousness model and the Mind System model. The sixth interlude lays the foundations for stages 7 through 10. The seventh interlude provides further refinements to the models of mind you've learned so far to help you fully understand subtle and profound meditative states. This book can be used in several ways. You can listen to the whole thing, or you can use it more as a reference guide, picking which chapters to hear based on the current state of your practice. Many will find the interludes of great help, but those less technically inclined may prefer to no more than lightly listen to the later interludes, just to give their practice some context. If you ever find yourself feeling adrift, uncertain about where the path is headed, the chapter to listen to again is An Overview of the 10 Stages. Together, the stages and interludes will lead you on a profound adventure of self-discovery and mental cultivation. If you take your time, studying the ideas and putting them into practice, you'll overcome psychological challenges, experience extraordinary states, and learn to use your mind with amazing proficiency. You'll discover an unprecedented inner calm and gain a deep understanding, even a direct experience, of ultimate truth.